welcome to the Sportscast, March 20th, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Apple Podcasts, Twitter. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. And of course, you can listen to us 24/7 in our live radio, which you can go on to our app or on our website, which is thesportscast.net. I'll get our app on the sportscast on the sportscast for Iowa. You can search for it, you'll find it. Ja Morant rejoining the Grizzlies. Joel Embiid, possibly MVP, join us all the way from the upper northeast of the U.S. Hal Phillips, welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thanks for having me, Santi. It looks nice outside, but it's not warm yet.
It was cool here in Florida today. It's been the low 60s. I know that's nothing for you guys, but it feels nice. I like it. If it's cool in March, I'm okay with it.
You know, we all have our crosses to bear. Don't get me started on Florida.
I know. Ja Morant, 8-game suspension, it feels like forever, is over, and the 2-time All-Star guard may rejoin the Grizzlies tonight when they host the Mavericks. Though it's unclear how if he'll play, but with the earliest being Wednesday, the Grizzlies announced that Morant would not play against the Mavericks because of a return to competition reconditioning. The Grizzlies know Morant has been working out, trying to be ready for this moment. Memphis was off Sunday after back-to-back wins, and Coach Taylor Jenkins said he would like Morant to practice or at least participate in the shoot-around before seeing game action. But he'll probably be back this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's not been a black box, but we don't know a whole lot about, you know, how everything went. He obviously did something dumb and is paying the price, and the Grizzlies need him back desperately, but they did win a couple of games this week without him, so that builds confidence within the team, and they're probably keen to get him back because there's only 10 games left and they want to hit the ground running, because whoever they get in the playoffs is going to be good because the Western Conference is so stacked.
Yeah, so stacked. Ja Morant obviously was in trouble a couple of weeks ago going on IG Live, which Hal does every day apparently. And he had he doesn't do this. He holds a gun right side of his head. And that got him in trouble. But there was a lot of mystery behind it a little bit. He had to go, well, not mystery, but he had to go to Georgia or something to go to a community program. So hopefully things are all right. He's a very important player. And as Hal was saying, they're third in the West. So they're looking pretty good. They have a 2-game winning streak. But I'm sure Ja Morant coming back into the fold will help.
I'm sure it will. I want to be clear because I'm not sure that it was. Everything happened so quickly and the punishment came so swiftly. I mean, Santi, do you know what the infraction was? Because there is a law that he transgressed. Do you know what it was?
I don't know. It happened in the state of Colorado, so I'm not sure what possibly can be. I haven't looked into it. Have you?
Apparently, what the problem was, you know, legally, is that you're not allowed to handle a firearm when intoxicated.
Oh, interesting.
Which I have to say is a very sensible law.
Yeah.
So, and then there's the question of how it even got there to Colorado from Memphis or wherever the team had been. So there was talk about whether or not it had been brought on a plane. I'm not sure. But the primary issue was that violation of that statute. And you certainly wouldn't be the first person to indulge in gunplay while stoned or drunk, but he might be the first one to purposely put it on Instagram Live. I'm way more careful, Santi, when I'm on Instagram Live, and you know, especially if I'm out clubbing.
I hope you are. I know Hal's pretty crazy in the club, especially up in Maine. So Ja Morant will be back this week for the Grizzlies and just in time for the playoffs. You want to get yourself rolling and going. They won't be in the play-in, so they'll get some rest. Yeah. As far as we know, things could change, you know, just like the Premier League, things can change. MVP race. Yes, we're talking about it. Everyone was saying it's going to be Nikola Jokic, but Embiid has come into play. He's had strong play these past couple weeks. He is averaging 36.1 points a game, which is pretty good. 4.6 assists and 2.3 blocks through nine games this month. He registered his 25th game at 35 points or more this past Friday, tying Moses Malone, you've heard of him, single season record by a center since 1976 NBA-ABA merger. Embiid also has the head-to-head edge over Jokic and Giannis, going a combined 3-1 and averaging 31.3 points, 11.8 boards, 6.5 assists, and 1.5 blocks, and one steal versus their respective clubs. There's still some time left, but do you think Joel Embiid will probably win the MVP award this year?
He probably will. I'm glad that someone new is being considered so strongly. I'm not a big fan of MVPs to begin with, Santi. It's a weird vestige of really 1930s culture, just the phrasing of it. Most valuable player gets us into all sorts of weirdness when we're trying to interpret, you know, what that really means. Everywhere else in the world, in all sports, they just give player of the year awards, you know? And that way you can more easily justify the idea that, look, you know, Jokic has won a couple of them in the last two. Maybe it's Joel Embiid's turn to be recognized for the beast that he is. But when it gets into this most valuable, is it most valuable to the league? Is it most valuable to his team? And honestly, when you go through all of that, I ask myself, do I care? I don't. I care about the playoffs. I care about, you know, on some level, rings. And I would love to see Embiid go deep and make a run with the Sixers. They've been incredible. I think they started 5-10, something like that. They've been as hot as anybody after a terrible, terrible first month of the season. So they're well poised for the playoffs. I like Embiid's game. I see him a lot because I'm a Celtics fan. The Sixers have real trouble with the Celtics now, but there was a time up until 2 years ago where they could not deal with him because he is so much to deal with. It's interesting that we point out Jokic and what an incredible all-around offensive player, and he is. He averages, 11 assists a game? I'm looking out. 10 assists a game for a center. That's incredible. But you know what? Embiid averages 4.6 assists for a center. That's incredible. With two and a half blocks and nine boards, 36 points, he's the whole package. The Sixers are good. Giannis and Jokic have won it recently. Time for some new blood.
Yes, and I've noticed, I did not notice, they kind of track the stats for these MVP races, so I did not know that. Joel Embiid is number one. He is a candidate. Then Nikola Jokic, number two, as we talked about before, and Giannis, number three. Interesting scenario. They're all big men in the MVP. That wasn't the case a couple of years ago, Hal. There was usually point guards or shooting guards. You see the difference?
I think things have changed. I think that the center has come back in a lot of ways, up and down rosters in the NBA. There was a time when it looked like, and I'm guilty as anyone pointing out that, you know, if you wanted to play center in the NBA, you had to shoot the three-pointer. And I thought that because I saw smaller and smaller centers doing more and more damage. Someone like Al Horford, I think, is in the NBA and still a viable NBA center because he goes outside and makes the three. But the NBA has pivoted once again, and there are dominant centers, and there are great centers up and down the league who aren't on dominant teams. Look at Bam, look at the fellow who's the guy who plays for the Pacers. He's had a great season.
I'll look him up for you.
No, I mean, how can I not remember? He's on my fantasy team. He's
center for the Pacers. I'm looking up on Google, not on ChatGPT. Miles Turner.
Miles Turner, he's a good center. Porzingis has had a great year. All through the Western Conference, you know, Zubats has been good. I don't think it's too surprising that centers are being considered for the MVP, but we do have a bumper crop of them now in a sort of an unlikely way. I think that the real stretch you know, the real stretch people on these teams now are the fours, not the fives. These guys do stay at home. They can shoot the three if they have to. But man, because there are so many threes being taken in today's NBA, the lane is just so much more clear than it has been in the past.
Yeah, the center position was a huge deal back in the past. I remember back in the 80s, Michael Jordan was selected number two, number three. Patrick Ewing was selected ahead of them. So that was that much importance. Four is Jason Tatum for your team, Boston Celtics, then Luka Doncic for the Mavericks at number five. So, but it's most likely from this list, I think Embiid. If not Jokic, but I don't see your guy, Jason Tatum, making it.
No, and I don't care. I okay. care about the playoffs. I don't.
Tatum's he can win great, the, yeah.
Tatum's had a great MVP. Year, and he has taken another step forward, as has Jaylen Brown. I like the Celtics, even though they've mystifyingly, I think they're 13-10 over their last 23 games. It's not great. And Denver, the other team that a week ago or 2 weeks ago, everyone was proclaiming a number one seed lock, they faltered and lost a bunch of games. And I don't like the back end of their 8 or 9 man rotation, especially come playoff time. I think that's going to make them vulnerable. But I won't lose any sleep over the fact that Tatum is not going to win an MVP. That would just make him harder to sign and more difficult a personality.
Exactly. Another
He's a human being.
He is another human being. Another big man, you can call him LeBron James, potentially will be back before the end of the season. He had a foot injury. Los Angeles has had an okay run without him. They are in the 10th spot in the West, so they're in the play-in pitcher. But LeBron is needed, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's needed to make noise in the playoffs. Right now, the teams behind the Lakers are Utah, who have not thrown in the sponge. They're playing hard. The Pelicans desperately want to make the play-in. So I think that's really the main competitor for the Lakers in the 10th spot. And if you're right now, the 10th spot is going to play, what, Minnesota for the right to play OKC in the 8th spot. So that's going to be entertaining. But I think that LeBron, they've actually finessed the situation very well. He's getting rest. He had a foot problem. He can't play. He's 38. You can't push it. You want him to play next year, maybe the year after that. They've apparently been able to rest him for the better part of a month without falling out of the race. That's the most important thing. And, you know, I'm not a Laker fan. I hate the Lakers. But
you're a Boston fan, of course.
Of course. But I think that everyone, including Bostonians, are keen to see a play-in involving LeBron and the Lakers. I mean, conceivably, Golden State could fall into that spot, into the 8th spot. I mean, it could be really fun. And if they get through, well, then they're playing Denver in the first round. Who's not going to want to watch that? So the Lakers have pulled off another miracle in the way that they've been able to coddle this team to the point that they have. I still think it takes second place to the trades they made at the All-Star break, where they basically brought in three brand new starters, Vanderbilt, Beasley, and who's the guy whose name I can never remember, who came over from Minnesota, who was an original Laker.
D'Angelo Russell.
Thank you. Why don't I can't remember his name? Good thing you're okay. Here, Santi. Anyway, I think they've played their cards very well.
Yeah, so as Hal said, the play-in pitcher, as of right now, things can change, fluctuate. Anything can happen. 9, Minnesota will be playing L.A., and then the other play-in is Golden State versus OKC. Golden State is at 7, OKC is an 8. Golden State was at number 6 for a bit. They lowered a little bit. They started winning on the road, right, a little bit, or they still can't find a way to win?
No, I don't think anything's changed. I think they keep getting destroyed on the road, but they can't lose at home, though. So, you know, that's 500 basketball if you're going to be Manichaean about it, black and white. What a strange, strange team. And I suppose it's interesting, too, to note that the teams that are really struggling at that end of the ledger in the West, Dallas and Golden State, don't have great centers. Dallas really has nobody but Powell to play that spot. They play Maxi Kleber a lot when they want to go a little smaller. He's competent, but not great. And the Warriors are playing Kevon Looney 35 minutes a night. I love Looney. He's a banger, but not an elite center. Everyone else above them does have an elite center.
Yeah, Golden State definitely lacks that center for the past couple, past decade of this team, this championship team. We'll see if they get together. It doesn't look like the Golden State from a year ago, but you know, things could turn around with health and everything. So in the East, the play-in pitcher is number 9 Toronto Van Fleet against number 10 Chicago without Lonzo Ball. And then Miami, my Miami Heat at 7 against Atlanta. The East and number 1 Milwaukee, they're kind of solidifying that role right now. Number 2 Philadelphia, 3 Boston, and then they're going to play Brooklyn. And then, of course, in the other part of the playoffs, potentially Cleveland versus New York. Boston, is that number 3 kind of set in stone, or do you think they could sneak into that number 2 spot at least?
No, I think anything could happen in the East, in both conferences. If we've learned nothing this year, Santi, it's that the top teams are still resting players. They're still bringing players back, like Middleton. He's been integrated back into the lineup. They're playing their best basketball right now. But we were saying the same thing about Denver 2 weeks ago, and they lost 4 or 5 or something like that. And that can be the difference between getting Brooklyn in the playoffs or getting Miami. And you know, if you're Philadelphia and Boston, that's maybe what you're thinking about. I don't think any of this is decided. The Celtics are only 3 games behind in the loss column, and I think they have the tiebreaker with Milwaukee. So that's not off the table. 10 games is a long time, especially when everyone is still resting guys. They're still taking every third or fourth game off as a load management procedure throughout this NBA. It's a little hard to take. Do you think that they're ready, you know, getting ready to go into the playoffs and trying to solidify a rotation? I haven't necessarily seen that. Maybe they're shortened the benches a little bit, but I think a lot of them are just trying to get to the finish line.
Yeah, this is a very important part of the season, trying to get your health back, staying healthy as well. And as Hal said, there's a couple of games left, 10 games left in the season. It will run all the way to April. And I'm trying to pull out the exact date of the season, around April 10th. No. 9th of April would be for the season in the NBA. So that is looking pretty good. Things can fluctuate, of course. Hal will be back, and we could definitely solidify what's going on in the playoffs. March Madness, Hal, have you been watching it? I have been watching it, and I've been hearing these top teams have been losing to these 15 seeds schools.
Well, there was a time, Santi, when there was no bigger college basketball fan than I. And I loved the tournament. I still love the tournament, but I come at it from a different perspective these days. I don't really pay attention to college basketball until it's worth paying attention to. And that means Thursday afternoon at noon. So I've been getting to know these teams as I've watched them. I watched Fairleigh Dickinson take on Purdue and beat them. I semi-called that to a friend of mine who is a Purdue product, and he's very angry right now. And I will say that my dad grew up in New Jersey, and they used to refer to Fairleigh Dickinson University as Fairleigh Ridiculous University. So now they're getting some great pub and make up for decades of bad pub. I watched Arkansas beat Kansas as well. That was a really fun game. And you can just see that Arkansas was growing into that game all through the second half. And Kansas just couldn't hold them off. Number 1 seed, defending champion, couldn't do it. But how can you not love Princeton beating both Arizona and Missouri? I really enjoyed that. They still play that very cagey cut and pop. You know, they shoot 3-pointers and layups. I love watching basketball that way. I was actually in the Providence Civic Center in 1989 and watched them almost beat Georgetown. That was the Georgetown team of Alonzo Mourning and Charles Smith, and nearly got that done. They had so many close calls there, and now they're into the Sweet 16, and that's fun. How can you not like that?
That's not a bad thing. As Hal said, the Jersey schools are doing well this year. They have previously, so this is nothing new. This is nothing new, obviously. Obviously, the Sweet 16 begins on the 23rd of March, about 3 days. A couple of schools are getting rested. Miami, actually, I was hearing an interview with Larinaga this morning, and they come back to Miami for a few days and then go back. So they're going to Kansas City. They're going to play Houston. But bracket-wise, looking at all these teams, do you have a favorite, or it could be a new, completely new school champion?
I don't. I have no favorites. I have no predictions. I didn't fill out a bracket. I'm watching the games as they come, and it's enjoyable on that level. I will say that one of the things that I do enjoy about college basketball still is that it's played by fallible human beings on the men's side and the women's side. They make mistakes. They screw up in a way that, you know, NBA players and WNBA players don't. The end of that Furman game against Virginia, number 13 win over the number 4 seeded Cavaliers. Amazing. They trapped a guy in the corner with like 9 seconds left, Furman did. And the Virginia guy like just hucked it up the court like there was 2 seconds left. But there were like 8 seconds left. So the guy, Furman corralled it, pitched it to a guy on the 3-point line, bang, winner. It was something you would never see in an NBA game. And it was spectacular. I enjoyed it.
Only two number ones are left, Alabama and Houston. There is a number 2 seed, UCLA, which they've done well in the past. Mm-hmm. Of course, Gonzaga, always a favorite. We'll see if they go deep this year. So we'll see what happens. Alabama never really gets that number 1 seed in history. They're known as a football school. Mm-hmm. This time, things have changed. Times have changed, I guess. Basketball might be their thing. We'll see what happens. But I hope a new champion will happen. I really do.
I like Houston. And I don't know hardly anything about them, but Kelvin Sampson can coach. He's still coaching the Cougars, right?
I do not know that. I do not know that for sure.
I believe he
is. I do have some coaching news after this.
I believe he is. And Kelvin Sampson always wins. And then he gets caught paying players or recruiting them in an untoward fashion, and he moves on. But the dude wins everywhere he goes. His teams are always very well coached. So if he's still coaching Houston, I'm picking them.
It could happen. Number 1 seed favorite. Rick Pitino, news today, is going to St. John's in New York.
Really?
Old timer still around.
Wow.
Good for him. Yeah, St. John's, a very historically good basketball school. Rick Pitino has been in Kentucky, right? Was he in Kentucky at one point? And then, Louisville.
I'm going to date myself, Louisville. Santi. I remember Rick Pitino when he coached Boston University in the early 80s when I was in college. And he coached BU. They won. He wins everywhere he went. And, you know, he played at UMass. You know, he played at UMass in the 70s. So he's a New England guy. And but he coached at Providence. He coached, of course, at Kentucky. He coached at Louisville and got run out of there because he was, you know, involved in a very salacious sort of extramarital affair that went public and some of the back of some restaurant. And but that's one of the great things about college basketball is that we seem willing to forgive and forget. Kelvin Sampson is always going to find a job, and apparently so is Rick Pitino. He did have to go to Iona to resuscitate his reputation, but you know, university presidents just don't care that much about these things. They care about getting into the tournament.
Yeah. See what happens where with Rick Pitino's new gig there. Never gets old for him. Let's go into soccer. U.S. men's national team is playing this weekend. They got two Asian League matches against Grenada on Thursday, and then on Monday against El Salvador in Orlando. This squad, let me read it out to you. How goalkeepers Ethan Horvath, Zach Steffen. Oh, he's back. I just realized that. They're not in the World Cup. That.
No.
Defenders, Mark from Genk. Tim, 36-year-old, is back. He's not letting go yet. Brent Reynolds from Westerlo. Anthony Robinson from Fulham. Miles Robinson from Atlanta United. Joe Scally. Austin Trusty, midfielders Brendan Arison, then Johnny Cardoso, Luca De La Torre from Celta Vigo. McKinney leads. Tyler Adams could not come. He is dealing with an injury, I think hamstring or leg injury. Yunus Musa from Valencia, Alan Sonora. Forwards are Taylor Booth. DK is back after a 2-year hiatus, I believe. And then, of course, Jordi Mulevic, Ricardo Pepi, Christian and Pulisic, of course, Gio Reyna, controversial Gio Reyna. We'll probably talk about that. and Alex Andejas, who has committed to the U.S. over Mexico. Your thoughts over this roster?
Well, it's pretty fascinating to see who's been chosen here and who will play and who won't. Of course, the first game is against Grenada, and they shouldn't have too much trouble there, but El Salvador is a decent team. They'll be a tougher ask, but who does get the call in goal? Stefan and Turner are now rivals for that top spot. One imagines they'll split duty, but who knows? Anthony Hudson, who's coaching this team, complete wild card. The games that he coached in late January were all MLS players. This is decidedly not that. There are some very interesting MLS people involved. One of them is Miles Robinson. Does he step right back in at center back next to Ream? I'd like to see that myself. I would like to see Austin Trusty. I would like to see Dest play again. He did not make the roster for the Champions League games that I saw AC Milan play with Tottenham. In midfield, Brendan Aaronson desperately needs a good performance. He's been terrible. He's really been terrible since the World Cup, if you think about it. I'm a big Aaronson fan, but he was complete non-entity in Qatar and has not played well for Leeds since that time. I guess the question in midfield is, with Adams gone, who plays the rear guard central midfielder? Who sits on top of the back four? The interesting name that I've noticed that's not here is Kellen Acosta. That's the guy who has essentially played that position when Adams can't, or when they're subbing out any of those central midfielders. I don't think that Acosta is accomplished enough to play at the speed he needs to play at the international level. I think we've seen that. We saw it in Qatar. So who plays behind McKennie and Musa if they go that route? I'd love to see Cardoso get a chance to play there. But I'm not sure that he's defensive enough. It could be very interesting to see. And up front, there's just all sorts of interesting people. I mean, does Reyna play? Does he start? After this, everything we know now, that's a loaded question. Pulisic is on this team. I thought they would rest him. Zendejas, newly committed. I'd love to see him play. But really, the four forwards that are up there, Taylor Booth from Utrecht in the Netherlands, Daryl DK with West Brom in England, Jordi Mihajlovic, you know, with Alkmaar, and Ricardo Pepi, that's you know, with Groningen. Three Dutch league players that are young and talented, and I would love to see them if I wasn't dying to see Reyna and Zendejas as well. It's gonna be fascinating to see how they sort of dole out the time.
Yeah, one position that I do want to see more solidified, and I'm sure everyone agrees with this, is the striker position. I'm liking Pepi. I got the app Pop Mob, as you know, and I get notifications of goals. And I see Pepi be notified a goal every time he scores, more than any other one. Maybe DK second. Which striker do you like the best from this pool?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I like all of them because they're Americans and they are doing well at, you know, pretty big clubs. But the American team is no different than any other national side. You go with the hot hand. If someone is ripping it up, you have to give them a chance to do it on the international stage. So I'd love to see Taylor Booth get some chances. I'd love to see DK against proper, you know, defenses, which I think he, you know, does every week in the championship in England. I like Pepi. I've got, you know, ESPN Plus, so I can watch Dutch league games willy-nilly, and I have seen all of those guys play some since Christmas, you know, in the second half of the season. I'd like to see them all. I think that at least against Grenada, they're going to get a chance to throw a bunch of guys out there. I think they're playing under modified FIFA rules now with five subs. A lot of them will be up top, I think. But there's just there's a lot of guys who aren't on this list. We've alluded to them sort of in an oblique fashion, but this team is as loaded as any American national side ever. And they just keep coming up with new young names that I want to see play. So we've never been in this position before. And Timmy Weah is not in the mix because I think he's been concussed, and Mihajlovic now, you know, gets to step in. That's going to be interesting. just really about as interesting. I think this is the most I've ever looked forward to watching a U.S. Grenada game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's mostly European that I see from this roster. I don't see any MLS players. There might be one or there might be one. No, there's not.
No. Miles Robinson with Atlanta United. That's right. The only one I see.
Yeah. So, you know, this U.S. squad, as we said before, it's a golden generation, you can say. I know golden generation means you got to win a World Cup or something like that. No. But this is
it does not mean that. It does not mean there's only seven teams that have ever won it. That does not mean a golden generation just means the best you've ever produced. And this is the best we have produced. I will say, though, there's a name here I don't really know. Alan Sonora from Juarez. Do you know who that is?
I've not heard from him. I've not heard of him committing to the U.S.
He might Maybe be on the could... under on the under 17 team that I seem to remember him. I didn't watch that closely, but I don't really know who that is. Who is that?
I will look that up for you. That sounds pretty interesting. I would hope. I know there's two games and five substitutes for each match. So I hope that we get to see majority of them. I know we can't see all of them, but a majority. The Granada match, we could see a lot more. I don't know.
You know, it's going to be, you know, I've seen them at Gold Cups. They're not terrible, but it's not like we're testing all of these guys against European sides, against whom we've traditionally done quite poorly. But El Salvador is a decent side, and that game's on TNT on March 27 in Orlando.
They're both on TNT.
They're both on TNT. They are. Good. Good for them. None of this HBO stuff. I really, you know, if you think
same channel as March Madness, can you believe it?
I know. The last Nations League competition, I'll admit, I was very skeptical of what this was. It seemed, I guess during that time, it was the only way to get teams together in what were pandemic conditions. So not a terrible idea, but it seemed like another contrived, you know, basically glorified friendlies. But the end of that tournament, if you'll recall, was a U.S.-Mexico final that Pulisic won with a penalty in extra time. That was a great game. Really entertaining. Both teams brought it. Both teams brought their A teams and their A games. So, you know, we have to endure Granada and El Salvador to get that. You know, I'm happy enough. And I suppose that as a coach, you're more inclined to pull in better players and put a little more stock in their performances when the games mean more. And these mean more than a friendly against Granada and El Salvador. So have at it.
Alan Sonoro, how I found him for some more information. He had the chance to play for Argentina. His dad is from Argentina. And his dad also played in the MLS, Diego Sonoro, and he decided to play for the U.S. 3 years ago, but he is 24 years old. He plays for Juarez, and he played for Independiente. I think that is a team in Argentina. So this player, I've not heard much noise, but this might be a good sign.
I feel like I've seen him on a roster. He might have played in the friendlies in January for a time. I don't know, but I'm getting it mixed up in my head with the under 17 CONCACAF championship.
He does have a brother named Joel.
Joel
Sonoro. So he might be him,
but he's 24. So they're not cap tying. They're not putting him in these games to ensure that he plays for the U.S. going forward.
I think Nations League is a pretty FIFA official match. So once he gets played, he's cup tied.
24 is a little old for that sort of maneuver, but you know, as the Zendejas situation showed us, things are heating up on that front. I think people say even without a coach and in the midst of, you know, a ridiculous soap opera scandal, guys are still opting for the U.S. project. And I'm not sure what that says about our reputation, the American reputation in CONCACAF, or Mexico's reputation at this stage. neither is stellar for very different reasons.
Perfect segue. There was a huge endorsement by Pulisic for a coach. Let me play it for you.
The World Cup that you're co-hosting might seem a long way away, But blink, and we're almost 6 months on from Qatar. Does the US Federation have as much time as it seems they think they do to get on with progress and get on with consolidating what you achieved in Qatar?
Yeah, for me, it's an interesting one because, like you said, I'm not here to appoint the next manager. It's not my job. Whoever it is, I'm going to play and give 100%, and that's what I'm going to do. But yeah, in my opinion, it's everything that happened with Greg. First of all, is I think handled in an extremely childish manner. I think we all have seen what's been going on. I think it's childish. It's youth soccer. You know, people complaining about playing time. I don't want to go too far into that, but that's what we'll say. I think Greg has been extremely unfortunate in the position to get even into the position he is now. Do I feel like we should just wait and wait and I don't think it's necessary because I don't feel we're in a phase like we were after not qualifying 4 years ago or however many years ago for the last World Cup, where we need a complete rebuild. We don't need some, a bunch of new guys coming in and this. We have a strong core, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people have seen that, and we need to carry on with that. And that's why it's a tough one for me because I think we could just want to continue that as soon as we can and build off of this World Cup, World Cup, which I think had a lot of positives in it, I will say. And I think we want to get going with that as soon as we can.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. So that was a clip from Pulisic interviewing the UK. I guess he hinted he liked Greg. Your thoughts on his comments?
I don't think that we've ever been of the impression that the players didn't like Greg Berhalter. Gio Reyna had a problem with him, I guess. We know that Gio's parents had a problem with him. But the players themselves, the core of this team, like him. And I think that they understand what he wants from them. We can get into the weeds with tactics. I think he asked too much of them in a way. They're playing a system that basically two of the three midfielders, which is the core of this team, couldn't finish the game. I mean, that's asking a little bit too much of it. A team, a midfield core that is supposed to be young and fit and athletic. If they can't finish the games, you got a problem. That's Greg's doing, but it's a bit of an arcane point. No, nowhere did he say they should bring Berhalter back. He kept referring to the core, and I think he's talking about players there. He's not talking about coaches. But I don't know that winning a single game in Qatar, which is all we did, and certainly the role that Berhalter played in what I'm calling the Berhalter Reyna family barbecue warrants his rehire. I'd be shocked if they brought him back. I think that they're meaning the Federation is taking note of the fact that Berhalter at least stood up and was interviewed for this investigation and came clean. And other than his referring to this situation obliquely and without names at that leadership conference, that ironic leadership conference, he didn't do much wrong here. It's mostly on the Reynas, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to put the team in his hands, going into 2026. I think we need a better manager. I think we need someone with a little more tactical expertise and flexibility. That's just the way I feel. We have such a talented side. To stick them in with Greg for another 3 years, I think would be a mistake. But that's just me.
Yeah, a lot of different opinions. There's pro, there's against. As Hal mentioned, there was a report that came out this week that cleared pretty much Greg Berhalter, and a lot of the commentators, the pundits, were saying that the Reyna family were just a little too selfish, I guess, in the situation. A name that's been brought up this week, it might be just a big rumor, is Thierry Henry. Yeah. Apparently, he's interested in the U.S. men's team to coach.
Thierry Henry has coached in MLS too. I mean, let's get someone who's got some international experience or some big club experience. I'm telling you, I think, well, I don't have to tell anybody. they're not going to make a hire until a sporting director is in place. They've as much said that. They're going to wait and give that decision to the sporting director they're hiring. It could be Oguchi and Yewu.
He's the only name that I've heard.
Right, they've leaked that purposely, I think. I think they like him. He's
all those leaks are done on purpose, don't you think?
Yes, mostly.
every leak I hear.
Well, they're all, someone's doing it purposely. Maybe the Federation isn't doing it purposely. Someone is leaking it purposely. They're going to give that decision to whoever takes the sporting director job. And that's not going to happen for, I think, another 2 months. But I'd be shocked if they brought back Berhalter. I don't think it makes any sense. It would be confirmation of the clubbiness and the insularity of the Federation, which is another rap that they're actively fighting there. They're going to, find someone else to do this job. I was hoping that Liverpool would falter a little bit more and they could maybe get Jurgen Klopp interested in this. I think he'd be the perfect guy to bring into this team and turn them loose and press the hell out of people all over the field. But, that's just a pie in the sky. It's all pie in the sky at this point. I think we have to also accept the fact that this is not a plum job in terms of world football. People aren't lining up for this job, even though it's going to be a guaranteed World Cup participation job. I don't know that established club managers or established international managers look at this job as anything that's so great. We'd like that to be true, but I just don't see the names falling out of trees that we would like to see.
Yeah, correct. I don't see much interest, but you just never know behind the scenes. And of course, Mourinho's name's been brought up.
Please God. God, no Mourinho. Please God. I
know. Yeah, that would not work out. That will last for 2 years, and then like a kid just walk away. But anyways, we did a lot today: NBA, college basketball, and some soccer. How? You are almost Sports Center.
Always a pleasure, Santi, to rip it up on a Monday.
What is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about March Madness?
Mandarin Hal. I tweet from there. I'm on Instagram under gen0.halphillips.net, and that's really a site about my book. It's sort of a capsule form of the modern history of American soccer, which is the book I wrote, published in July. And those are probably the two best places. I'll look forward to chatting with folks online. Mix it up.
Yes, and you could check his link right in the description to get his book or more information about it. And you can reach us at thesportscast.net, our website, or thesportscast1 on Twitter, also Instagram. We'll be following March Madness tomorrow. Sports Talk 101 returns. And then on Wednesday, Alan's going to recap the week of what happened in March Madness a little bit more in depth, more closely. And then Thursday, Jersey Boys, and they're going to see the whole free agency with NFL and all that. Anyways, that's all she wrote. Hal, I appreciate you coming on to the Sports
Game. Always fun, Santi. Cheers.